This is the Gas House Gang on 104.1 FM KMOX. Sponsored by Saliga Heating and Cooling, a Daikin Comfort dealer. And by Anderson Hospital, a Newsweek World's Best Hospital. Now, the Gas House Gang on KMOX.
It's always great to be with you on the Gas House Gang on this Tuesday, the final show for Cardinals manager Oliver Marmol. As the season wraps up with Bernie Miklas and Chris Ronji, I'm Tom Ackerman. And wait, where's Ollie? Oh, no. What's going on? Let the rumors start. No, I'm just kidding. You know, it's just unbelievable. People are like, oh, he's not there. What happened? I am going to tell him this when he comes on the show, that I'm just so thankful for this show. I think it's been a lot of fun to be able to visit with him. Sometimes not easy. I think he's had to talk about some topics that he doesn't exactly feel comfortable with, Bernie. But all in all, this has been a good process. It's been a show that I think that we really enjoy. And actually, I'm going to bring Ollie in right now. The Cardinals manager is with us on KMOX, on our live stream, on X, on YouTube, on Facebook. And he is in San Francisco, where the Cardinals were victorious yesterday over the Giants. And good morning to you, Ollie Marmol.
How we doing?
Doing well. I was just telling, I want to say this right out of the gate, in case we run out of time at the end of our segment, because we do so much baseball, but I do want to deliver a thank you right out of the gate for this. Now, this is the last show that we'll do for now. I think there's going to be the possibility of maybe we do some more things like this in the off season. I think that would be a lot of fun. But just in general, wanted to thank you in front of everybody. And you know, you have been really from the beginning, Ollie, very available to us. I can remember, I just want to tell a quick story. After you were eliminated from the postseason in 22, and we were finished with sports on a Sunday morning, and I got up that morning and there was a text from you, and you said, I'd like to come on and answer any questions you have about what happened. And that's just you. And, you know, you made yourself available. You've done it here again. And this has been a great format, not just for us. I mean, for the fans is what this is for, to allow them to understand what's going on with the team.
No, I appreciate that. I do remember that text. We weren't supposed to jump on. But that was the whole Helsley situation that people loved me for. So I remember shooting you a text and saying, hey, I'd rather jump on one more time with you, answer any questions that you guys may have or that the fans may have before we go into the offseason. And I think that was the right thing to do. But this is a really good way for us to communicate directly to the fan base, which I appreciate.
Well, it's been terrific. And I want to start things off. Congratulations on the win, and then we'll kind of work backwards from there. But last night, good solid bullpen effort. My gosh, Michael McGreevy gets rewarded. He picks up his eighth win as the bullpen shuts him out for the rest of the game.
Penn did a nice job, man. That, one of those games we were talking about a couple weeks ago where a couple of you guys are down and other guys need to step up in order to get you to your back end. No Swanson, no Riley. So you have to figure out a way to get there. And Fern did a really nice job, man. He looked good. King got his guys, and we were able to kind of bridge it and hand it to JoJo there at the end. But overall, those guys were phenomenal and gave us a really good look. It was a good game, a little back and forth there. Their offense is really good. They got some real dudes in that lineup. So I enjoyed that one a ton.
Ollie, Bernie, good to have you again, as always. Going to miss these every Tuesday. So, I don't know. I think we ought to just badger you all off season, frankly. So anyway.
We might just have you want to talk Blues.
Yeah, that's right.
When do they open up?
Because we got soon.
First exhibition game Saturday.
Yep.
Saturday. Yeah. Okay.
So you got five games left. And I know, obviously, there's a little ball left. So this is not the final, the final summation of your season. But tell us one thing that really pleased you about this season. And tell us one thing. Other than the record, I know you wanted to do better with your record, but just in terms of your team, tell us the one thing you really like about the season, the one thing maybe disappointed you or you certainly just wished could have been better.
Sure. The one thing that sticks out to me that I'm really pleased with, and I can speak for our staff as well, is how willing and welcoming our players are to just overall coaching and the tough conversation. There's times where you have a group where they're a little bit reluctant to that, and they take criticism as almost like you're against them rather than you're trying to help them move their careers along. And this group, and I can go down the list, man, from our pitchers to our pen to our position players, how amazing it is to have an honest conversation with them that hopefully leads to change, and the way they receive that and at times even seek it out, man. Like you take somebody like a Victor Scott, who's not having anywhere near the year he was hoping for. And the conversations you can have with him, and he'll seek it out. Like, hey, I want you to give me everything you've got today. Like, he'll show up 30 minutes before clubhouse opens, and he'll walk into the coach's room and find Jay and say, hey man, walk me through everything that you didn't like yesterday. I want to know, and I want to improve it. And it's incredible. And our entire group is that way, which allows you to move this thing forward way quicker. So I've been really pleased with their overall demeanor and willingness to be coached. Man, the thing that sticks out that is disappointing, and it's probably more on my, I wish I could have done more leading into the trade deadline in order to keep some guys and maybe just add a small piece to give us a shot. You look at where we're at today. We're 3 or 3.5 out, whatever the case may be, after losing those three guys and having Donovan out for a while, Contreras out for a while, Burley out for a while, Nato out for a ton of time, Mason Wynn. And it's you get to the end. The only reason you do this is to win. That is the only like you do this in order to get to this point of the season and have a shot to play some games in October, and that's the fun part. So that's the part that gets me every morning over the last 10 days or so. Is like, damn it, we're so close, and I wish I could have done something different, something a little bit better, leading into that trade deadline to give ourselves a shot. But unfortunately, here's where we're at, and what I'd love is our guys are still taking their best shot. They're not going to give in until that last game, which is awesome.
Yeah, so go ahead, Bernie.
No, just to follow up, and it's along the same lines. Listen, you do a great job of inviting scrutiny and even criticism because you like to be able to explain things. And even on our show every Tuesday, you know, you see the comments that are there. There are people that will be really critical or nasty or have sincere criticisms or questions. But
sure.
I know you like to try to block out the noise, so to speak, right? Because it would drive anybody crazy if you're just a prisoner to that. However, how do you scrutinize yourself? Like, how do you grade yourself, judge yourself? How do you see to it that, hey, I can do things better and I will do these things better? So what has your growth process been like in that area of critiquing yourself and being really maybe hard on yourself?
Yeah, and at times probably to a degree that's not great or healthy. I'll hold myself to a higher standard than anybody on the outside is going to, and I'm going to critique and second guess everything I do in a way that allows me to improve upon it. And then you also have to have really good people around you, and this is where Skip Schumacher was incredible, Descalzo is incredible, and that's why I was so confident in being able to have these two guys be bench coaches, because you have to have people you trust, people you love that are going to tell you the truth and not just agree with you because they want to keep their job. And both those guys do a phenomenal job of it. So we have a feedback loop, man, where post game and then the next day we talk about every move that was meaningful. And Dusty's a part of this as well. JJ's a part of this, and we just sit there and we talk through the game of what went well, what didn't go well, what decisions did we make that worked and which ones didn't work. And what you have to be careful with is there's times you make a good decision that just doesn't work. And you have to take a step back and go, all right, if we continue to do that over time, is it the right move? And if so, then that's fine. You move on and it just didn't work. But there's times you make a bad decision that does work. And you can't just pat yourself on the back and keep moving, because if you continue to make that decision over time, you're going to get beat. So you have to have people that can speak into that and make sure that you're doing exactly that. So, criticism, it comes with the seat. I would say, if I'm being completely honest, man, I didn't handle it well at all in 23. because it was the first time. When you're the bench coach, everybody loves you, right? Everyone's hating on the manager. So you're the guy that can just – you talk to the players. It's a good place to be. And it was the first year where I truly felt from the outside that criticism. And you can spend a lot of your waking moments defending it, or – and I felt like I did too much of that in 23. Or you can just say what happened, say why you made the decision, and allow people to form their own opinions on it, and then keep moving. But for a manager to sit there, or anybody in a seat of any type of scrutiny, to tell you that they just block it out completely, they're full of crap. No one's built to take that much criticism on a daily basis. You have to create some type of mindset and process for how you're going to handle that. And some do it better than others.
How often do you feel like the criticism isn't warranted, or you hear it and think, this guy doesn't know what he's talking about?
See, that part is the part that doesn't matter to me. If you have something to say, there's a reason you're saying it. I don't take many people's criticism into account. There's a circle of people that I will listen to, and there's some that are just dumb, and that's okay. They can have their opinion, and the reality is they have very little information as to why certain things are done, or big picture, that they just don't have all the information. So at the end of the day, they can have an opinion. That's what fandom is about. But you have to keep your circle pretty tight in how you create that feedback loop of making good decisions and not.
Sunday was a day of tributes. John Mozeliak threw out the first pitch, final home game as president of baseball operations. And then just before the first pitch of the ball game, you have a change in the lineup. Nolan Arenado starts at third base, and then he is taken out of the game for the opportunity to hear from the fans. Take us through that Sunday, if you would.
Yeah, I walked into the weight room, and he was in there stretching, and I felt like, man, I have no idea what the future is going to look like. We don't. We can all make assumptions, but we're not sure. And I would really regret going into the offseason not allowing our fan base to acknowledge what he's done for this organization and how hard he's played and he's posted. And just, this is a Hall of Fame third baseman. And if it is the last game that he plays as a Cardinal, man, I wanted people to be able to appreciate that. And so we made the change and had him run out there, and I just wanted him to have that moment, just in case it goes in a different direction.
I wanted to keep passing it around, but let me follow up on Arenado for just a minute.
Absolutely.
You know, how would you describe if it is at the end? We don't know that, but let's just say from when he came here to now. How would you describe the journey? I mean, it has been, I don't want to say tumultuous, because he's ridden it out and he's played at a very high level. It's just that in the end, none of you got what you wanted, which was a championship. Certainly that was on his agenda when he became a Cardinal. Just how would you describe the Nolan Arenado, when we look back at the Nolan Arenado experience in St. Louis?
I love him. I do, and it's mainly because of his heart for competing. This dude wants to play every day. There's one thing on his mind every second of the day, and it's how do I get better in order for us to win? And if you had enough guys that thought like him and approached the game like him, man, it'd be a beautiful thing, because it's all he thinks about is how do I get better defensively? How do I get better offensively? How do I get other people around me? But like, it's just a constant, relentless pursuit of excellence. It makes me, like, when you're a player, you think you work hard. Like when I played, I thought I worked hard. And then I look at what Nato does on a daily basis, like, damn, like he doesn't stop. So I have a ton of respect for him and how he goes about it, his game. He's treated me like gold, and I'm really appreciative of that. And I think his time with us was well spent. Unfortunately, there's other factors that play into not winning to the degree that we wanted to with his time with us. And that's just out of his control, is out of my control. It's just, it is what it is. But as far as appreciating him for what he does on a daily basis, I have a ton of respect for him.
Players can learn a lot from their teammates. Do you think enough guys on this team have learned from him or are watching?
Yes, I do. And some of them have tried to mimic the work ethic. Some are intimidated by it, and because they understand, man, he's really good. And if that's what it takes to be good, like I have a lot of work to do, and that's okay. That's okay. But yes, to answer your question.
Let me take a quick break, and then Bernie can lead us off in the next segment. It's 12:20, just about. It's the Gas House Gang on KMOX. It's always a treat to be visited by Ollie Marmol, sponsored by Siteman Cancer Center, National Leaders in Cancer. Back in a moment here on KMOX.
The pitch by Romero, a swing and a hot shot to second. Fermin has it and throws out Ramos for a Redbird winner in San Francisco. Three up, three down for the Giants in the ninth, and this ball game has come to an end with the Cardinals winning game one of their final road trip by a score of 6-5.
Yes, they did, and the Cardinals play tonight, 8:45. John Rooney will have the call. Ricky Horton, Mike Claiborne, Jim Jackson, Ryan Schulte, while we're handing out thank yous. What a job they do on the radio side all year long with this team, with Bernie Miklas, Chris Ranji, and Ollie Marmol. I'm Tom Ackerman. Bernie, let's lead off this round of questioning with you.
So, Ollie, I'm watching the game last night, and I stay awake. I'm into it. But I got to say, when Herrera hit that bomb off Verlander, and it wasn't just the bomb, it was looking at Verlander on the mound, where he was like a combination of, and this is one of the great warriors of all time, combination of, you got to be kidding me. Like he was ticked off. He was just like looking where that ball landed. You know, you could just tell that it just sort of shook him. And I don't mean that in a demeaning way, but Herrera's got that ability to do that to pitchers. But I wanted to ask you this. It's such a fascinating situation because last week, as I don't have to tell you, you know, you revealed that, you know, the Cardinals would like to put him back at catcher next season. And he'll have to have some elbow cleanup to remove some loose debris in there. But talk us through that. But, I just wonder if it's realistic that he could improve that much. And you do have other catchers. And is this something you'll revisit or is this like a final decision? You're going to put him back behind the plate.
Yeah, no, great question. I love that he hit it. He comes down. He touches home plate and he's kind of jogging to the dugout and he looks at me. He goes, "That's Verlander. I got him." And just the look in his eye, like it's one thing he wanted to do before that game was over. Like, I'm going to clip this guy. And it was fun to watch. So regarding the catching, here's how we're approaching it. We've had some extensive conversations, myself and Haim, as far as what this should look like. And I love giving him the opportunity to come in a spring. And show that he's capable, because if he can do it, then that bat profile is even better and gives us an opportunity to add different pieces around that in the DH position, whatever the case may be, right? So here's a big part of that conversation is he's going to get that scoped out and cleaned out so that there's no pain when he throws. That's a big part of him being able to actually rip through it and feel like he's putting something behind the baseball when it comes to throwing guys out. So how he bounces back from that is going to be important. And then he's super determined on going through this curriculum on the game calling side and the preparation side as to what information he needs to continue to look at, retaining that information, being able to recall it on the spot and when to veer from it based on what he's seeing. So it'll be a very hands-on approach. And then we'll go into spring and give him an opportunity. So when you say final decision, I think the way I would view this is give him the best chance to come in to win that job, and we'll make a decision then. But I think it's the right thing to give him every shot of making this happen and then allowing us to evaluate.
A two-part follow-up, please.
Yeah.
Number one, when you sort of moved him out from behind the plate, you know, one of the things you cited is you didn't want to see him get beat up behind the plate and get injured to the point where, you know, you don't have his bat in the lineup, and which really made sense. And then number two, somewhat related, is there still a chance that he could surface in left field depending on what happens this offseason, who may move out, roster changes and such?
Yes, and I wouldn't take any of that off the table. Part of it is the elbow is bothering him. So continuing, you can throw him in left field from time to time like we did. You're not throwing nearly as much as when you're catching and throwing every pitch back to the pitcher and having to throw out runners. So we just wanted to make sure that we didn't make it worse. So keeping him in the lineup was important for him. Just get him as many at-bats this year as possible so that we can see what we ended up seeing. And then the lower half was something that was continuing to bug him. But I think this guy's he's a workhorse. And he's going to go into the offseason. He'll address the lower half stuff. He'll come in really good shape. I have zero concerns about that. But it made sense to give him the run of at-bats that we did while protecting the lower half and the elbow, knowing we were headed towards what the announcement was earlier this week.
So when you say you're going to, it's going to be a hands-on thing with him during the offseason and whatever program he's working on to get better behind the plate, is it he'll be in a lot of these guys go back home, a lot of players just go back home. So how will you continue to monitor what he's doing and the progress he's making?
Yeah, a lot of this will be it's still in the works as far as how we're looking at this, because our facility in Jupiter is not ready. And if you remember, we're tearing that down, we're building it up and making it a lot better than what we've had the last several years. So it's not as easy as just come down to Jupiter. There are some ways to work around that we're talking through, but in a perfect world, our staff is hands-on with them in Florida. And then there's a little bit of back and forth because he does visit Panama and goes back home with family for a little bit. So we would like to be as hands-on as possible during that time, but we're still working through some of those details.
Ollie, are all of those decisions made, and how do they get made as to who goes where? Winter ball, Arizona Fall League, go home, start showing up in Jupiter, working with coaches. How does that get planned out, and around what time does that all get planned?
Yeah, I mean, there's different conversations throughout the year, but that's more kind of front office, player, agent conversations more than anything. Yeah.
Well, we have a lot of I'm going to start popping these up here as we have questions coming in from.
I saw one, Tom, before you pop the foul ball yesterday. I saw one pop up early. I can't remember who asked it.
Yeah, I was going to see that. I was going to ask that, too.
So we can visit that one real quick because I know there's some confusion on it. You can't challenge that play. You can only ask the umpire to either ask for help, whether that's get the whole crew together and see if any of the other three guys saw it, but you can't challenge a foul ball. So the frustrating part on that one is that he wouldn't ask the crew, and that's where I lost my mind. It's clearly a foul ball. What makes it difficult for them is that Jordan runs to first, right? So normally you hit something off your foot, you hit something off your leg, you stay in the box and you don't run. So it made it confusing because they thought they kind of saw something, but at the same time he ran, and once they don't call it, the play's over. So there's no way of challenging that. So JC clearly saw that it was a foul ball. That's why he slowed down, because he was going to stop and go back to third. So the whole play looks like it looks terrible, and it looks like a base running mistake on Sajacy's side. But the reality is he saw a foul ball, which it was, and he slowed down to go back to third for the next pitch. And all hell broke loose, and it was bad. But you can't challenge it. They just have to make the call live in the moment or get together as a crew and overturn it, which they would not.
Lauren wanted to know, part of that question is what you said to the umpire. Can you tell us or no? Are you avoiding that? Or
I knew you were going to come with that.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's important.
I said a lot of things, and some weren't very nice. But he kept me in the game, because I think part of that was a missed call. But I cannot repeat what I said.
No. Because we're getting to the off season, can you now tell us like what your favorite thing you said to an umpire this year?
No chance.
Okay.
No.
All right.
Because
I don't know. I think that one thing you got in with this was last year. That one thing, or maybe it was 2 years ago. The one thing you got into with CB Buckner. That's in the John Boy like Hall of Fame. That was one of the all time best for people. And I hope our listeners.
It was also the most expensive. It was also the most expensive, Bernie.
That I have to say, man, you're talking to a kid that grew up watching Earl Weaver screaming umpires.
I love it.
That exchange with you and CB, and I'm just talking about it as pure entertainment. You two going back and forth. Oh my gosh, was that fun?
No, he had some. We've been able to talk that one through a little bit. He had some good lines in that one because he told me and he was right. He's like, you just got here, man. You don't have a chance to speak. You've been here too long. I mean, it was a good back and forth, man. He's a good dude, and we are in the entertainment business, so it was a good one.
Have you ever – all right, here, because you've been doing this for a while now, but I mean, you know, the Cardinals managed it since, you know, 2022. When you go out there to holler or, you know, not even curse, just holler. You're ticked off. You're hot. Mm-hmm. Has there ever been an umpire who, because he's just kind of maybe a smart aleck and he's witty and he says something and he just stops you dead in your tracks and it's like you don't know what to say after that because he kind of caught you off balance?
There has been, and it didn't lead to an ejection because sometimes these guys – are witty and they make you, all right, this guy's not going to throw me out. I get your point. You let me yell for a little bit. We're good, you know? But there's times where that happens and it's usually your veteran umpire that's gotten yelled at by the Bobby Cox of the world. And I mean, they've been around for a minute and they're like, listen, I mean, I've done this a lot. And they don't have this quick trigger. So yes, there's dudes that do that from time to time. And that's at the end of the day, man, the job is hard. You're going to have those type of instances where you just go back and forth and you yell at each other. It's part of the game. And it's nothing against them personally. It's just you missed a call. I hate it. And it's going to disrupt what we're trying to do here. So I'm going to let you have it.
How often does a guy just tell you as soon as you get out there, hey, I blew it. I'm sorry. I missed that call. And then it completely disarms what you want to do.
That happens probably more often than people think. Yes. And I appreciate it. I mean, certain guys are pretty discreet about it as well. Like yesterday, the first pitch of the game was two balls off. It wasn't even close. And Newbar looks over at me and he's like, what in the world? Well, the umpire looks over a couple pitches later and gives me the like, I missed it. You know, fine. As long as we don't have the ego and saying like, no, that was there and we're going to double down on it, then yeah, we're all going to miss stuff from time to time. So he looked over. He's like, man, I missed that one. I apologize. All right, perfect. Let's keep going. No worries. So that happens probably more often than people think.
Your comments keep coming in about how people have enjoyed this and how you've grown as a manager. It would be cool to have Haim on the show sometime. Well, we're going to hopefully be able to do that too. Your offseason and your closeness with Haim, that's one part of my question. But also this offseason, you mentioned your circle that you like to – you hear maybe some criticism from your circle and some good criticism, people kind of guiding you along. We know that Tony La Russa was one of those who – has helped you along as a manager. Who else can you let us in on that you like to lean on?
Man, I have people in the game and out of the game. I love Skip Schumacher. I mean, he is one of my favorite people I've ever been around in this game. My respect for him is through the absolute roof for a lot of reasons. Who he is as a person, more so than just a baseball guy. But you can speak honestly with him, and he shoots you straight. And that's my personality just leans that way a ton. So the more people I can have around me that can do that, the better you're going to be, man. I love surrounding myself with people that are elite and even better than me. That's at the end of the day, man, that's all that matters is do it with people that are really damn good at it and that are also good people. 162 games is an absolute grind, and you better surround yourself with people you love doing it with. But there's other guys in the business world that have been incredible and CEOs of big companies that have lent their time and mentored me and helped me understand how to deal with criticism. And they're running big corporations where, man, everything falls on them and they walk you through times where things were very difficult. So I not only have guys in the baseball world, but also in the business world that have been really, really instrumental. Yeah.
Ollie, my intent here is not to put you on the spot, but I know that in all of our conversations and no, seriously, in recent weeks, we have talked about planning and talking about what's going to happen after the season. And then you did it again today, which is totally cool. I'm glad you speak freely. You mentioned something about you and Haim getting together to talk about this, talk about that. I mean, you speak about it as if, how do I phrase this? As if you know you're going to be back for 2026. And to me, there's no doubt that you should be. I really mean that. But
well, I appreciate that, Bernie.
But by putting you on the spot, I mean, I know that that's up to the team to make any announcements. But it seems like you're at least, how do I say this, comfortable with the idea that you're still going to be managing the team?
I mean, I better continue to do my job until they tell me not to, right? Like, so that's just the way I view it. So once we get into the off season and have those discussions, then that's what it is. But I mean, it's in my nature. It's my person. I'm a do the job all the way through, and then we'll see where we're at once we're done with these five games.
Ollie, okay, we appreciate that. Your time very much. You see, well, what people may or may not realize is that Ollie can see these comments in real time as they come in before we put them on the screen. But they're all coming in support of the show, and we certainly appreciate that. Thank you for the time. We appreciate you, and we will catch up with you, I'm sure, real soon. And good luck tonight against the Giants.
No, I appreciate it, guys, and thank you for the way you guys went about this. The three of you, I mean, honestly, you have different viewpoints, different things that you're passionate about when it comes to the game, whether it's the tradition of the game, the numbers, you name it. So it's been cool to be peppered with questions from different angles, because it's no different than what makes up our fan base. Like, not everyone cares about the same thing. So being able to answer different styles of questions live and just kind of let it rip and speak from the heart as far as here's how I see the game has been fun. So love to continue it. But again, thank you.
Also, for next year, we hope to retire the word runway and never say it again. I never, never want to say it ever, ever again.
We're closing down the runway.
We're closing that down.
It's over.
You got it, brother. Appreciate you guys.
Runway officially closed. Bernie and Chris and I will be back. Ollie, thanks so much.
You got it.
The Gas House Gang on KMOX, our conversations with Ollie Marmol, is always sponsored by Siteman Cancer Center, national leaders in cancer.